Meeting recording is in progress.
Okay. Okay, and you can see the class. It says please stand by.
It's no, I don't see it. Please stand by. Well, how do I get rid of this panel on the right? So I can get
What's that?
how can I
Here.
get it bigger?
Okay, make it bigger.
Yeah. Don't think I could turn the pages.
Yeah, I'm gonna
Oh, there it is. There it is. I
yeah,
see.
you should see it.
I see on the side here. One second.
Okay.
Zoom in. Zoom in. I get rid of this. I can't get rid of it. I have like a page here on the left. Great, thank you.
Okay.
Now, where are
Okay.
the arrows that get it up and down?
Yeah, I'm gonna do it. So you just have to tell me which page, when to turn the pages, because I'm
Okay.
presenter right now.
Okay, it's time to start.
Okay. So I'm gonna go to page two.
Turn the page, yeah, to the next page. There we go. Terrific. Okay, good evening. This is Chaim Bravin, the Rosh Yeshiva of Web Yeshiva. And it's getting close to Pesach, but we're still at it. Just remind you, if you have any shailas about Hilchot Pesach, things that come up that you have to ask a rabbi. That's what the rabbis are there for. Take care of those kinds of problems. So don't be shy. Go and ask a rabbi. The last five parshiyot of the book of Shemot contain a mystery. And that mystery is that Truma and Tetzaveh, the first two of the five, are about building the Mishkan. But they are told in the Torah before Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from Har Sinai. And the reason for that probably is that coming down from Har Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu discovered the golden calf. He discovered idolatry. So it somehow would be unseemly for the story of building the Mishkan to take place after. I mean, in fact, because of what happened, the story, the building of the Mishkan actually did take place after the golden calf was built. However, now we have a new situation. We have Mishkan, tabernacle, golden calf, and then Mishkan again. Then Mishkan again. This situation, I mean, doesn't take care of the problem. It doesn't explain why there was the Chet HaEgel, but somehow it gives the idea of building a Mishkan a little bit more sanctity. Like it's not sort of tied in entirely to the building of the golden calf. Somehow it encourages me to think in terms of atonement, that somehow the people of Israel, under the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu, were granted atonement from heaven in spite of the terrible transgression that they did. And so the two parshiyot that come after Ki Tisav, Vayakel Pekudei, the parshiyot of this week, this Shabbat, that we're going to read in Shul, Vayakel Pekudei. These two parshiyot are about actually building the Mishkan, not about when you build the Mishkan, this is how you should build it, but here we are building the Mishkan. And the second of these parashiyot, the parashiyot of Pekudei, the parashiyot of Pekudei, I would like to take a little bit of a closer look at. So you see on the screen, Ela Pekudei HaMishkan, Pekudei HaMishkan, these are the details, the stuff, the counting, the accounting of the Mishkan, Mishkan HaEdut. That's what the Pasuk begins to say and introduces itself. We're going to tell you, the Pasuk says, how all the material that was collected in order to build this Mishkan. Now Rashi helps us. So we have to learn Rashi phrase by phrase. You see the Rashi says, Eile Pekudei. Let me just see if I can get a, I guess I can't. You're about to about control the rest. No. Okay, Eile Pekudei. Good day. You see those words in Rashi? Beparashazo, in this portion of the Torah, Nimnu kol mishkelei nidvat ha-mishkan, the weights of all of the things that were donated to the Mishkan. There was a record kept. Lekesef, silver, lezahav, gold, and lechoshet, copper. V'nimnu kol keilav lekol avodasav. Further, it is we count all the vessels that are built, right? Lekol avodato, the vessels that are built for this for the service of the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, that's great, but I'm not sure I understand. I'm not sure I say why this is important. And why it's important, I mean, I guess when you're building something, it's good to know what you've got and what you need and what has to still be collected. But why did the Torah tell us this? Why do I have to know today how much gold, how much silver, how much copper was collected for Bnei Yisrael? Then Rashi goes on, and Rashi just says it. That's what Pekudei means, Pekudei Mishkan. But then Rashi says, Ele Pekudei Mishkan, Mishkan HaEdut. Mishkan HaEdut means the Luchot, the tablets. They are the witness to Matan Torah, so they're called Luchot HaEdut, and the Mishkan, the tabernacle, which was the place that they were reposited, is called Mishkan HaEdut. So Ele Pekudei Mishkan, to read the Pasuk, Ele Pekudei Mishkan, these are the details. The accounting of the Mishkan, comma, Mishkan HaEdut, the Mishkan that we call Eidut, right? We call Eidut. Rashi takes a bit of a liberty here, and he says HaMishkan, HaMishkan. He reads it differently. He doesn't put the comma after the first Mishkan, but he says, you know, all these things, the Torah is not written with vocalization. When you read the Torah scroll in shul, it's not vocalized, and there are no diacritical marks. So, Beparashah zo nimnu kol mishkelei nidvat ha-mishkan, right? I'm sorry, that's the first part. Ha-mishkan, ha-mishkan, mishkan. You could read the two words as though they come together in a phrase. So Rashi says, Shnei pa'amim. The word mishkan appears twice. Remez lemikdash. We're already thinking about the Beit HaMikdash. Shenit mashken. V'shnei churbanin al avonoteihem shel Yisrael. He says, this is a hint, this idea that the word Mishkan, I mean, you just look at it looks strange. So Rashi says, well, it means something. It has further meaning, deeper meaning. And the deeper meaning is that Remez is a hint to the Beit HaMikdash, which was taken away, which was put into escrow. B'shnei churbanin al avonoteihem shel Yisrael. So I think there's like a big idea here. The first idea is that Bnei Yisrael were made aware from this drasha, from these two words of Mishkan, Mishkan, they were made aware of the fact that they're going to build the Beit HaMikdash, they're going to build the Mishkan which will then morph into the Beit HaMikdash, but it's not going to last. They're not going to have peace. Remez leMikdash nitmashkein b'shnei churbanim, they'll be destroyed twice. Al avodoteihem shel Yisrael, and we say it now because you know that the pasuk says, and Rashi explains at the end of Perek Lamed Beis, that every time the Jews are punished for something that they did that should not have done, a little bit additional punishment will be added for the Egel Azahav. So while it's true that the original intention that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought up to Moshe Rabbeinu, which was, let's wipe out the people, let's destroy them, and Moshe Rabbeinu was able to argue for mercy, that doesn't mean that the punishment has been undone, that there is no punishment, quite the contrary. And Rashi says it's right here. You know, Bnei Israel are about to build a Mishkan, which is a sign, you might think it's a sign of their reprieve. They're not being punished. They say, no. Eidut liYisrael shebitel lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu al maaseh ha'egel. Mishkan ha'eidut. Right? Eidut liYisrael. It's the opposite is true. Shevitel Eva Kadosh Baruch Hu al Maaseh HaEgel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave in and was not going to punish them for the building of the golden calf. Sharei Yishra Shechinato b'neihem. When they built the Mishkan, right, the Shechina was in the Mishkan. So the Shechina is in the Mishkan. So that's a good sign for B'nai Yisrael. So this is like, you know, have you ever wondered why some Jews are a little confused about who they are and where they're going and what they can expect? So you see, Rashi, a Mishkan, Mishkan, that means that you should know, Bnei Yisrael should know that the Mishkan is not the panacea. It's not going to stop the world from becoming less than it might be. And that the Chet HaEgel will continue to bother you. Alavonoteihem shel Yisrael. Mishnei churbanim. Now it doesn't say Chet HaEgel, but that's the only thing we know of at this time. This time it just started. The Chet the life after the Chet HaEgel. So what did the Torah tell you to think about Mishkan? Mishkan, think about how bad things might be. Mishkan Haidut. At the same time, Eidut liYisrael, Shevitel Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu al Maaseh HaEgel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed them to continue to exist in spite of the Chet HaEgel, Sharei Hishra Shechinato b'neihem. That's the proof. It's not just the proof that they are still alive, because that doesn't mean anything. But Hishra Shechinato b'neihem, would HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow the Shechina, God's presence, to be in the Mishkan, if he had not forgiven them, or forgiven them in large part? I don't know. So you have these like here they are, but Israel, they're happily in the world, which includes the place of God, but they're not sure how many credits they have to remain in that world. Pasuk Kav Bet. Okay, Pasuk Kav Bet. Well, I'm sorry, Biyadi Tamar. Avodat HaLeviim. I'm sorry, Rashi. Avodat HaLeviim, Pkudei HaMishkan. Kelav Hu Avodah. Avodah HaMesura LaLeviim BaMidbar. Laseit Ulhorid Lakim Ish Ish Tumasao Mavkat Alav. That the Leviim have the job, Avodat HaLeviim, Biyadi Tamar Ben Aaron HaKohen, right? They have the job of moving the Mishkan from one place to another. Biyadi Tamar, Itamar was one of the sons of Aaron. Biyadi Tamar, who Hu Haya Pakid Alehi, he was in charge of them. Limsor lekol beit av avodah she alav. Every household had a certain job that they, you know, the different children of Levi had different jobs. Pasukav bet mitzalel ben Uri ben Chulam ate Yehuda. We saw that last week. That he had a name, he had a full name, Limate Yehuda, Asa et kol asher tziva Hashem et Moshe. Asa et kol asher, and now we come up with the problem that we had last week. And the problem we had last week was, why do we need Bezalel? What was it that Bezalel did that Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do? And we had an answer, the beginning of an answer, but we'll look at Rashi, and Rashi will give us his answer. Bezalel ben Uri asad kol asher tziva Hashem et Moshe. Bezalel did what God commanded Moshe, which sounds like Bezalel, that Moshe Rabbeinu was still in charge, that Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu passed on the Torah, which included how to build the Mishkan, to Bezalel. Right? Bezalel ben Uri asad kol asher tziva Hashem et Moshe. Rashi. Asher tziva Moshe ein k'tiv kan, ela kol asher tziva Hashem et Moshe. Kol asher tziva Hashem et Moshe. What's not written? Asher tziva Moshe. It says kol asher tziva Moshe. Right? What does that mean? Afilu dvarim shelo amar lo rabo. Iskima da'ato l'ma sh'ne'emar l'Moshe b'Sinai. So Rashi actually elevates Bezalel to the primary recipient of the Torah that has to do with the Mishkan. It's like saying Moshe better receive the Torah of the Mishkan, he's not to pass it on. But Bezalel didn't need to be taught about the Mishkan by Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, "Afilu dvarim shelo amar lo rabo." Even things that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't teach it, his schema da'ato l'ma sh'ne'emar l'Moshe b'Sinai. Somehow, he had this great talent. He was able to intuit or to receive in prophecy what HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught Moshe Rabbeinu b'Sinai. Ki Moshe tziva leBezalel lasot techila kelim. Moshe Rabbeinu, the parasha of Truma, said, first make the kelim. The first kli that they made was the Aron. After that, there was a shulchan. They made the kelim, the furniture they made. Right? Ki Moshe tzibal b'tzalel tzotchila kelim. He said, first Truma. V'achakach mishkan. That's tetzaveh. Amar lo b'tzalel. B'tzalel said, right? Nebuch, Moshe Rabbeinu, min ha'olam, the way it works in the world, in the real world, in the real world, is first you build a house and then you buy a couch. Not the opposite. That's what Bezalel said. Amar lo Moshe. Moshe said, "Bezalel, Kela, that's your name. You were in the shade of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, you got it yourself. Ki vaday tzivkach tziva lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'chein asa ha-mishkan tchila v'achakach asa ha-keilim." And so the two parashiyot at the end of the book of Shemot, well, I mean, they say something about Torah. They say something again about Torah. What's the Torah? The Torah is the Torah of the Mishkan. And Moshe Rabbeinu heard the Torah, but Bezalel somehow got it. Even if he didn't hear it from Moshe Rabbeinu, he didn't know what Moshe Rabbeinu said, and therefore he could even disagree with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu said, first build the kelim, the furniture, make what you're going to put inside, and then build the building. And Bezalel said, whoever heard of such a thing? We have to build the building, and then we'll put in the furniture. And that's because Bezalel was Bezalel Kel. When Bezalel said something, it wasn't just a reasonable thing to say. It was a Torah thing to say. It was the right thing to say. And even though he was at odds with Moshe Rabbeinu, he was nevertheless the person who knew what it was that he was supposed to say. And then the Gemara, the next pasuk says, pasuk of Gimel Vito, second in command to Bezalel. I mean, why would you mention a second in command to Bezalel? You've got Bezalel, he's Bezalel Kael, Aliyah ben Achisamach l'matei Dadan, Charash v'choshei v'rokeim, B'techelet or Agaman. He had all these skills. He was a very highly skilled laborer. U'betolat ha'shani v'sheish. But there is an interesting comment that Rashi makes. And this comment is in Kitisa, Lamed Hey, Perek Lamed Hey. I'll just tell you what Rashi said. It's not on the sheet, but I'll tell you. Aliyav was Mishavet Dan. We see Ito Aliyav ben Achisamach Lamatei Dan. He was from the tribe of Dan. And so Rashi says, or Rashi teaches us, Min ha-yirudim ba-shvatim. It was like the simpler group of shvatim. Min ha-yirudim. They were lower. Some of the Danites were less impressive than the other tribes. So he says, Mipnei ha-shvachot, because they were the children of the handmaidens of Yaakov, Ishvuhu hamakom lebitzalel lemelechet haMishkan. Here you see that Aliyav is equal to Bezalel. About Bezalel, it says Asad kol asher tziva Hashem et Moshe, right? General statement, but Aliyav, Parash, Choshev, Rokeim. Right, he had all these skills. He's put on a par with Bezalel. Vehu migdolei hashvatim. Bezalel was from Yehuda. Gedolei hashvatim. Lekayei ma sheneemar velo nechar shua lifnei dal. Only Karshua lifnei dal, that people are, you know, equal. Rich people, poor people, people with, you know, high regard for themselves, and people who are not taught to have that kind of regard, they're all equal. And so, according to Rashi says, as Rashi does sometimes, Rashi sort of says, I don't know why Aliyav is mentioned. I don't know why he's mentioned, because when you build a building, you put up a sign and you say, this is the architect and this is the builder. And the, you know, a few people, you mention a few people, you don't have to mention everybody. You don't have to mention the assistant to the assistant or the assistant to the second in command or the third in command. I mean, there's a limit. So Rashi sometimes says, you know, this pasuk comes to teach me a lesson, of tremendous social value. And because it was of tremendous social value, it's included in this pasuk right here, even though the Rashi's on a different, the pasuk in Kitisava, it doesn't matter. That doesn't matter, right? So Rashi says, the thing I learned that is of great value is that in terms of a person, in terms of what a person is capable of doing, in terms of what a person can achieve in his life, there's no, the birth doesn't make any difference. Doesn't make any difference, Rashi. Rashi said it. And he learned it from Aliyav, who is in a pasuk exactly parallel with Bezalel. And whereas Bezalel was a kol asher tziva Hashem et Moshe, Aliyav actually did most of these things. So last week we said that Moshe Rabbeinu was a man of great precision. He was able to build exactly perfectly. Exactly and perfectly. If the Torah wanted a 2 meter table, it would be exactly 2 meters. So there's a story that Moshe Rabbeinu was not able to figure out how to build the menorah. We say, what's the big deal with building a menorah? After all, the menorah was 7 cups. You put in oil and a wick, and you have a menorah. But apparently, Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to measure how high it should be and what the base of the menorah would look like, whether it be a rectangle or a triangle or some other geometric figure. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him what the menorah looked like in a dream. But Moshe Rabbeinu said, I don't get it. He just kept saying, I don't get it. And finally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him the menorah on fire, a fiery menorah. He said, do you see it now? It's a fiery menorah. Moshe Rabbeinu saw the fiery menorah, but he couldn't translate it into a physical menorah that's not on fire. And so he went to Bezalel and he said, what do you say, Bezalel? How are you going to build the menorah? So he said, oh, no problem. No problem, we'll get it done. So it seemed to me what we were learning last week, that here Moshe Rabbeinu was not able to do something, to build something in the world. Now, those of you who live in Israel and have ever tried building something, either your house or an apartment or fixing a kitchen or a bathroom, you're probably amazed at how it never comes out quite the way you thought it would when you started out. So Moshe Rabbeinu could not be imperfect. He couldn't produce a Mishkan that was less than perfect. Bezalel, he wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu. He had no problem with that. Bezalel was a man of the job. He knew that when you build something, it's never exactly the way you want it. It's always somehow off center, off kilter, off something. It's always off something. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not for you. You're not going to be able to do it. We'll get Bezalel. He'll do it. And he'll have a tape measure. And he'll measure. And it'll fit in exactly. Or it won't fit in. So he'll give it a little push here. It'll give it a little push there. And it'll make it. Now this story that I'm telling you about Moshe Rabbeinu and Bezalel, is not just a story that came to me. But it's meaningful because we know that the Mishkan is a model for the building of the Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash is the enhanced version of the Mishkan, right? It's the idea of the Mishkan in a fancier setup. That Bayit Rishon was very fancy. Shlomo HaMelech built it. And by a chain, he became very fancy at the beginning. It was not so fancy, but it became fancy by a chain. But if not for the fact that Bezalel built the Mishkan, Bezalel, the man who was less than perfect, who was not able to pass up the opportunity to build something just because he wouldn't get it perfectly right, that made it possible for Shlomo HaMelech to find the people to build the Beit HaMikdash. If Moshe Rabbeinu had built the Mishkan, and if he had been able to apply his notion of precision, of truth, of the only way that it could be, no one would be able to ever repeat the building of the Mishkan into a Beit HaMikdash. But because Bezalel built the Mishkan, And we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu approved of that building and the result of the building of the Mishkan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu approved of that. Since we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu approved of that imperfect building of the Mishkan and the menorah and the Shulchan, all of that was done, you know, more or less the size that it was supposed to be, but not perfectly the size. There was no doubt that Shlomo HaMelech would be able to build the Beit HaMikdash, and that after him, Ezra would start building the Beit HaMikdash again, and it would go, and it would even be built by, in some regards, by Herod. So you have this interaction between Moshe Rabbeinu and Bezalel, which I understand as being Moshe Rabbeinu, the man of precision. Whenever he taught the Torah, he got it exactly right. He knew exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to say, wanted to pass on to Bnei Yisrael. He knew all of that. He, Moshe Rabbeinu. Bezalel, he wasn't like that. He wasn't a great Torah scholar. The first Mishnah Pirkei Avot does not mention anything about Bezalel. I mean, it's a Kenim, but this Kenim and that is not Bezalel, not Aliyah. They knew how to do something very well. But very well doesn't mean the perfection of Torah. That they did not. That they did not know. So I would like to mention another idea. If we could turn the page. There, is that it? You turn the page. Here, there was another pasuk in Ki Tisa, and also connected to the Mishkan somehow, which we said at the we mentioned the beginning. Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lemor, Vata, Daber Bnei Yisrael Lemor, Achat Shabtotai Tishmoru, Ioti Beni Ubeinechem, Lidoroteichem. Suddenly we're talking about Shabbos. Daber b'nei Yisrael le'mor, pasuk yud gimel. Ach et shabtotai tishmor, ach. I want to, you know, ach et shabtotai tishmor. That's like a statement about the Mishkan, about building the Mishkan. But, you know, Shabbos, you have to keep Shabbos. Ki oti b'ni u'b'nechen, it's a sign that there's a Beini u'Beinechem, that we're somehow connected together, Ladat, to know, Ki ani Hashem mikadishchem, I am the God who sanctifies you. Let's look at the Rashi, Vata daber b'nei Yisrael, daber b'nei Yisrael, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Vata, af al pi sheifkadeticha litzavotam al melechet ha-mishkan, even though I have commanded you, Moshe Rabbeinu, to tell them that they've got to start building the Mishkan, how you care be nechal itchot et Shabbat? Don't you think so that Shabbos is not important? Itchot et Shabbat mipnei otam melacha. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu realizes that Shabbos is in danger. He goes and tells Moshe Rabbeinu to build a Mishkan. So of course Moshe Rabbeinu says you got to conquer talk. I did it right away. I got to do it as soon as possible. That's what a command from a Kodesh Baruch Hu means. So if you have to do it as soon as possible, then maybe Moshe Rabbeinu will Rashi says, Al Yakel Beinecha, do not think lightly of the Shabbat at this moment, that somehow the Mishkan pushes away the Shabbat, Mipnei Ota Melacha. And then, Achet Shabtotai Tishmoru, but no, keep the Shabbat. Keep the Shabbat. Rashi says, Achet Shabtotai Tishmor Av L'Pishati Yu Ridufin Uzrizin Vizrizut Melacha Shabbat Al Titchem Mipanecha. Even if you're in a hurry and you're running to do to build the Mishkan, don't allow the Shabbat to escape. Kol Achin V'Rakin Mi'utin. You see the Ach? Ach, I don't have I can't underline. See in the top line, the first pasuk, Ach et shabto dai tishmoru. Ach. Maybe I can do this actually. You're about permission to announce a request and wait for the present or him. Oh, great. Ach, here we are. Not so good. Ach, I can erase. 1 second. Great. Oh, yeah. Okay. Acha chapter Taitishmo. Here it is, this part of the Pasuk. So Rashi says that the word Ach Acha chapter Taitishmo, Abba Bishat Yud. He says, Kol Achim Virakim Miyutin. Every time the word Ach appears in the Torah, it comes to limit something, right? Lima'et Shabbat mimelechet haMishkan. To say that Shabbat versus Mishkan, Shabbat wins. And so even though you're commanded to do the work and to build the Mishkan, you can't do it on Shabbat. Why not? Ki oti beini berichem, because it's a sign. Ot gedolahi. It's a great sign. Beinenu shebacharti b'chem. It's an indication that I chose you. Banchili lechem et yom menuchati limnucha. So, in this argument that takes place between building the Mishkan and keeping the Shabbat, and keeping the Shabbat, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Bnei Yisrael, explains to them that Shabbat is not just a prohibition. Don't do this, do that, right? It's not just that, but Shabbat is an oath. It's the agreement. It's the base agreement between us, right? Behanchili lachem et yom shmeluchati limenucha. I gave it to you. I gave it to you. You know that you can't just keep Shabbat. You can't keep Shabbat. You have to be directed to keep Shabbat. If somebody who has not been given a command to keep Shabbat, so he's not really doing it. He's not really doing it. Anybody can sit around and take a day off and not do anything. But to be responsive to the tzivui, to the command, that's what it is. Ladat, Rashi says, Ha'umot ki ani Hashem mikadishchem, because I make you kodesh. So at the beginning, I think, of this evening, I said that Shabbat is the universal sanctity. It's God every place. God is every place in the world, and we're actually keeping Shabbat together. And that's the oath. It's not that we're keeping Shabbat, that that's what we do. But we do as God does. It's the opportunity that we have not only to accept a directive from heaven, which is an opportunity, but it's an opportunity to be with God in this enterprise, that Shabbat. Mishkan, the tabernacle, the Beit HaMikdash, is a special place within the created world where we think, we hope, it was true at the time of the Mishkan, that God's presence is more noticeable. God is more available. God's more available. So it's not like Shabbat. Shabbat is every place. Any person who was commanded to keep Shabbat together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that command to keep Shabbat together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not neutralized is not neutralized by the building of the Mishkan. It's not greater than. But Shabbat is greater than. Shabbat is greater than. You know, the Nachman of Breslov explains, you know, the Arizal had this idea that the Arizal had this idea that in order to create the world, God had to make a place for the world to be. And that place was the Chalal HaPanui. Made an empty space into which God put the created world. But the Zohar insists that even though God, it sounds like God is around the created world, it's also true that God is within the created world. So that somehow the world that God is in is every place. Every place in the world is God's world. So again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu went to tell people to create something for God. I mean, of course, everything is good for us, but it was for God a place to create a place. We were given instruction on how to make that place and how to keep it. But it did not take the place of Shabbat. Did not take the place of Shabbat. And apparently that's what we're supposed to think about when we think about the prohibitions of Shabbat, the 39 kind of categories of prohibitions that exist on Shabbat. And that we learned those 39 categories prohibitions from the Mishkan. But that doesn't mean, even though the Mishkan is a model for the prohibitions that we have to assume on Shabbat, even though that's true, it's truly a model. Nevertheless, it's not the Mishkan that informs us about Shabbat, but it's the Shabbat that informs us about the Mishkan. That even the people who have an oath, who have an agreement with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, an agreement that we're sort of in this together, and that agreement is Shabbat, even those people might need a Mishkan, might need something to keep them more realistically connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what the Mishkan is. So the Shabbat is the creation of the world, and the Mishkan is Har Sinai, the two formative ideas that the Jewish people have carried around with them since the beginning of time. Of course, the creation of the world is God's gift to us, and the Mishkan is somehow our gift to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Bezalel, who finds himself in between Moshe Rabbeinu and the regular citizens, is the one who was able to make that connection. All the best. Have a good Shabbos. Be well.